aggression. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
They are who we thought they were.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is Next Fan Up. We have just finished watching the Super Bowl, in which Denver defeated the Panthers, was totally the underdog, not the team most people were expecting to win this game, but they were able to pull it out. Peyton goes out on top. We have a lot to talk about. To start off, I have a bunch of super fans with me, so I should begin even there. So just going around, I have a bunch of super fans here for this show, being our big Super Bowl show. Start off, the king of all the super fans, we have Jay Soderberg, Pod Vader himself. How you doing, Jay?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It was a fantastic game. It was a lovely game. It was one that I slept through most of the fourth quarter.
That is great, Jay. I'm sorry that it was not a big, exciting game for you at the end. Yeah, it kind of fizzled out there. It was hilarious to see Peyton at the end of the game. He didn't look tired at all. He's like in his interview, and he's just like, hey, how's it going? Yeah, game's over. I won a Super Bowl. Like, he looked so, like, relaxed because he hadn't been working for the past, like, quarter at all. But incredible. Yes, so, Jay, thank you for joining us. I also have with us Nick, the super fan for the Chiefs. How you doing, Nick?
Well, you know, evil wasn't vanquished, but once again, the Chiefs can say that they beat the Super Bowl champ. So basically we won.
Nice. That's great. Thank you for joining us. I also have Neil, who is the Washington Redskins super fan, joining us all the way from across the ocean. What time is it there tonight, Neil? What time are you at right now?
Right now it's 3:45 in the morning. I'll be getting up and going to work in a couple of hours.
Nice.
It
was worth it. In this era of high-powered offenses, we got a beautiful defensive game tonight, and I just loved defense, and it was terrific.
I love that Jay is falling asleep, and you are, like, burning on into the midnight hours there watching the game. It's a great comparison. And finally, we have one last super fan with us tonight, probably the saddest super fan. But, dude, you guys had an amazing season. Jimmy, please, we'd love to start with you just telling us what you thought of this game. You are the Panthers super fan. Thank you for coming on. I know you're in heartbreak right now, but we're there for you, man. I've only known that feeling. I've never won a Super Bowl. How was it for you guys? Yeah, what do you think of the game?
Hey, I mean, definitely heartbreaker. We got beat. Bottom line, we got beat. The Denver's defense showed up and just completely dominated us on every aspect. I'm very glad Von Miller got MVP because he deserved the MVP award more than anybody on the field. And if Peyton would have gotten the MVP award, I would have been more inclined to say this was a fixed game. But I'm still going to say this is a fixed game just for Peyton to go out. But we'll get to that point before I'll come back to that point. But I mean, the difference in this game were the sack fumbles by Von Miller. He's the MVP of the game. He made the difference, the two difference plays in the games. Not one play from either quarterback made a touchdown, either throwing or rushing. It was just the one offensive touchdown from Jonathan Stewart that made the only offensive touchdown besides, I mean, yeah, C.J. Anderson made his touchdown, but it was very disappointing. I came out looking a little nervous, looking a little tight, and I kind of expected that. I thought they would settle down as the game would progress, and I think they did. But another thing that I think people overlooked was Carolina's defense shutting down Denver's offense. We shut them down the entire game. Just the fact that Denver's defense shut down our offense, which I didn't expect to happen to. I thought we would score just enough points to win the game. We just couldn't do it. And at the beginning of the season, would Carolina lose in the Super Bowl, I would have said we would have made the playoffs. So, yeah, I'm glad we made the run we did, and we only lost Atlanta and Denver in the entire season, and we lost the most point game of the season. But the type of season we had and the way we went out and the way we finished the playoffs and just, I don't know. I'm just very disappointed the way we came out. And people will say, oh, Cam will be back. But we don't know if Cam will be back. This may be the last time Cam goes to the Super Bowl. last time Carolina went to the Super Bowl before this was in 2003. It's been 12 years. It's just, I don't know. I'm very disappointed. It's a heartbreaker as much as any other team, and I'm glad Peyton got his and DeMarcus Ware. Those are two deserving players. Aqib Talib, he's a piece of shit. I can't stand him. it's very heartbreaking. I'm glad Peyton got his. Let him go out on his high note. And I know that's what the world wanted. Let him go on his high note. And DeMarcus Ware, he's paid his dues. Let him go out. Let him get his Super Bowl as well. But good God, like the ball never touches the ground. How's it not a catch? I don't understand. The ball never touches the ground. How's it not a catch? And we get, I don't want to go any further than any conspiracies. I don't want Patrick to come on the show randomly and just say, I'm not, I got a lot of thoughts going through my mind. I'm going to shut up. I'll ask for, make sure I'm not the crazy one here, but it's just, what the hell happened? I don't know what the hell happened. It's just, it's a disappointing loss either way.
Jimmy, hey. Jimmy, I got a question for you, Jimmy. How many Budweisers have you had so far this evening?
I lost count. I was keeping count early in the half, and then as the game got out of control, I just, the shots were flowing, and I lost.
No,
I
totally.
Lost count. It's goodness gracious.
So do you blame Cam at all? Like, how much are you upset with Cam, or how do you feel with his performance?
I mean, Cam did not have his best game, that's for sure. But when you look at, Cam had two interceptions, one off Ted Ginn that went through his hands. I'm trying to remember the first interception. I can't remember, but I thought Cam played a decent game, a game good enough to win. Every throw that was dropped hit the receivers in their hands. There's two or three that he led the receivers too far. I remember one specifically leading punches a little long, but there's several drop passes by Cochran and Ginn. I'm like, what the hell are y'all doing? We can't have this happen in the most important game. And as the season's gone on, people are like, oh, our wide receiver core is not the greatest, but they've been doing their thing. And finally, those flaws that kind of show, I don't know if it's just coincidence. I know they're not great, but they're good enough to do their job. And then the one play where Ron, the first challenge by Ron, the play, the ball never touched the ground, and ended up ruling an incomplete pass. I don't know how that's an incomplete pass, but it ended up being an incomplete pass. And then we get a sack on Peyton, and they rule it not a sack, but we challenge it. I don't understand why we challenged that. I know we were going to win the challenge, but that was our last challenge of the game. It was early in the second quarter. Thankfully, we didn't need a challenge later in the game, but I was like, that's a bad challenge. I mean, it's a loss of yards regardless. But we challenged a 4-yard sack just to, I don't know. It's a lot of weird things happen. Goodness gracious.
I'm sorry, Jimmy, man. I'm going to move on to some of these other guys to talk about the game. Do you have anything else you want to say? Feel free to stick around as long as you want. I know you probably want to hop off and go continue Budweisering.
I'll stick around for the comments, just for response. But I mean, what a heartbreak! What a disappointment! Does anyone else feel like this game was fixed, or am I just being a little drunk and a little conspiracy theory action? Does anyone else feel that way?
I'll open it up. Any ideas of fixed football?
I don't think this game was fixed. And you're talking to the Patriots fan who will oftentimes side with the Patrick who will randomly come on the show and start yelling at people. I will say that the refereeing in this game left a lot to be applauded because there was no applause for the refs in this game. I do think there was some pretty questionable calls. There were a lot of non-calls made, but that happens in the Super Bowl. You know, oftentimes the refs end up swallowing the whistle in the championship game, and I don't think that's right either. Now, on the same token, I don't necessarily want to see the refs throwing the hankies all over the field because there's holding on every single play. But at the same time, I mean, there was a pass interference call that was clearly missed. And I mean, when Phil Simms mentioned that the refs missed a pass interference call, you know it's pass interference because Phil Simms never, ever points that stuff out. So in terms of the refereeing, yeah, I don't think that it's fixed, but I will side with you that it was definitely not in the Panthers' favor, and it was definitely bad. There was bad refereeing in this game. The other thing I noticed in this matchup was the first quarter was all Denver. Carolina, I mentioned to my father-in-law during the pregame, I was like, oh, the Panthers look pretty loose. Now, the question is that going to be loose good, or is that they're too loose? And then they're going to come out and play this game, and they're not going to be ready for what's, you know, coming on them. And it turns out, it looks like they might have been a little too loose. It looks like they weren't ready. They weren't business as usual. The Broncos came out. This was a business trip. When you look at this game and you look back at some of the plays that happened in this game, the Broncos came out and they made this a business trip. The Panthers came out and made this a vacation. And that wasn't going to bode well for them, as the final score said. I did see at the beginning of the second quarter, the Panthers looked like they were going to try and take this game over. And then it didn't happen. The Broncos got control back, and, you know, the Panthers only came away with one score going into halftime, and that wasn't a good thing going in Carolina's favor. And then the one last thing that really ended up hurting and why this ended up being the Von Miller MVP game is I'm not sitting in front of a computer. I'm out in the car so that I don't wake up the family. The third quarter, I believe Jim Nance threw out a stat that the Panthers had put up 140 yards of offense in the third quarter alone and had 0 points to show for it. That's not good. And at the end of the day, if you've gone a football field and a half and you haven't put any points on the board, you're not going to win very many football games.
Yeah, for sure, man. Just that stalling over and over again. Nick, Neil, do either of you guys have a response or something you want to add, other angles you thought were interesting about this game?
Yeah, I feel about the same way, and that I think the turnovers were really what turned the game. And, I mean, that's just kind of how it goes. You cannot have postseason turnovers. And, you know, not only did Newton have an interception, although Manning did too, but it was the fumbles. I mean, the fact that Carolina lost three fumbles, right? Yeah, three. That was really what killed them.
What did you think on that first fumble, Nick? Do you put that on Cam? I mean, it was not to his blind side. It was to his open side. And it was as if he didn't see the guy coming at all. What did you think of that first turnover, which really to me was when the game – you know, the point that Denver took advantage and they never relinquished it after that. What did you think of that moment?
Yeah, that was a big momentum changing play. In terms of who's responsible for it, I think Cam needs to have a little bit better awareness about that, just knowing who you're playing, knowing your opponent. And even if you haven't tracked where the guys are, you know you need to get the ball away a bit faster than that, especially given that you're practically on your own goal line. But at the end of the day, I mean, it was something that Apod actually mentioned earlier. I mean, it felt like this was sort of like the veterans against the new upcomers. I was rooting against the Broncos in this game. I'm a Chiefs fan, man. I'm the Chiefs super fan. But it still just felt like this was a coaching staff that was coaching up a bunch of veterans that knew they were on their last run. The game was never too big for them. Whereas for Carolina, they seemed a bit, I don't know, the stage seemed to affect them. And that was one of those moments. I think Cam, it got into his head a little bit. The pressure starts rolling once, you know, that's another big thing is that Carolina this year, and this is something I think we'll get into later in the pod, you know, just talking about how this affects the different conferences and what this tells us about the different conferences. But, you know, the Panthers, they haven't been down a lot and a lot of games this season. And that was something I always thought about going into this game, even though I still expected the Panthers to win it, is, you know, what happens when Cam gets down and when the team, you know, is down by a bunch of points, nothing seems to be working. They haven't been in these positions where I mean, there were a few games late in the season where they came back in a tough competition. Granted, that was against, you know, teams like the Saints that were not on the same level as the Broncos in terms of how good their defense is and things like that. And so when you're playing a really gnarly defense on the biggest stage in the game, and things aren't going well, how do you respond? And I'm not saying that Cam can't handle it, but it was just his first time. It's his first trip here, and he's going to be back. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, he's going to be back no matter what. But I do think that you saw a bit of a separation between the veterans of this sport and some of these younger stars that are moving up. And so, like you said, that first fumble, that one on the goal line, that was one of the situations where Cam was holding on to it a little bit too long. His internal clock should have been running a bit hotter. And I'm not blaming him for it, but it was an example of one of those threads we saw throughout the game. I mean, the amount of you can't have four turnovers in the Super Bowl and win it. I mean, that's almost it's almost a rule.
Go ahead. I was just saying, Oh, go ahead.
No, I am deferring to you officially now.
I was just saying that, like, the idea, right, that if him, how he would handle the big stage when things don't go his way, does he shut down? How did you feel about the last turnover? Even the announcers are talking about how he didn't go for that ball. He made the decision that he didn't want to dive into that. Had he already lost his fight? I know there was not much of a chance left at that point. But I have to say, for him, I thought he didn't fully shut down until that moment. That was the moment when I was like, oh, yeah, he's like McNabb vomiting in the Super Bowl right here. You know, this is like his moment where he's no longer, you know, he doesn't have it in him to want to try to fight and win this anymore. What did you think of that moment? Should we forgive him at that moment, or is that bullshit that he doesn't dive in and go for that ball?
That was weird. I mean, that was one of a few different moments in this game where it was just bizarre. I mean, I would put that up there with the really big punt return. I think
weird,
it was Norwood. That,
weird play.
That, yeah, where it seemed like the Panthers players thought he fair caught it, but he didn't make the signal, and they had him wrapped up and then just let him go.
Yeah.
I'm more interested in what Jimmy has to say about that, but yeah.
Go ahead, jump in. Who is that?
Yeah, that punt return, I don't know what the hell they were doing. I'm sitting there, the punt's kick, I don't see a fair catch signal at all, and you got Teddy Williams running down on him, and Colin Klein, both gunning down on him, and he's there, he catches the ball, and we like two-hand touch him, and just let him run off. I'm like, what the hell are we doing? I'm sitting there screaming at TD, why the hell did we hit his ass? And he's running. I'm like, what are we doing? And he just turned off. I'm like, what the
It looked to me that the first guy was about to hit him, and then you can't hit him even if it isn't fair catch, right? You have to let him catch the ball. So the first guy was going to hit him and realized, I got to slow down, and pulled up. And I think the second guy saw the first guy pull up and thought, oh, he must have signaled fair catch. So the second guy actually had his hands on him, but I think he didn't realize the play hadn't ended. And it was just a really fluky, weird play. But again, a major special teams play, the longest punt return ever in a Super Bowl. I don't know. Other thoughts on that play? What do we think?
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing there, Mark, is that to me, when I saw the play happen live, I thought that there was actually going to be a flag for interfering with the receiver on the catch of that punt, because it looked like the Panthers had gotten there early. And then, of course, he took off and ran and had a big return, and it totally backfired. It was, and even on the replay, like you mentioned, you see the one guy, he's actually got his arm around Norwood's waist, but never finishes the tackle. And again, I think it's all because he felt like he'd gotten there early, and the receiver hadn't caught the ball, and you're supposed to give the receiver every opportunity to catch the ball, but you're also supposed to tackle the guy. So you might as well take the penalty at that point. That was weird. Going back to the Cam Newton not diving for the fumble at the end of the game, that was weird to me too, because this is it, dude. What are you saving yourself for? Like, this is the last game of the year. There isn't anything else after this except for the off season. So get in there and sacrifice your body and try and win this thing. I mean, yeah. The craziest things have happened.
The guy,
Tom Brady, you know, Tom Brady led Rob Gronkowski down the field in an AFC Championship game and was a 2-point conversion away from forcing overtime. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility that could have done something similar here. They just didn't.
And that was not what we'd seen from Cam all year. I mean, he would throw his body around for touchdowns when he was already beating people by several touchdowns, and he's doing flips into the end zone. So, yeah, it was definitely a shift in Cam in a way. Somebody in this game that played, I thought, an awesome game and really looked classy at the end is Norman. I thought him going up to Peyton and the way he handled Peyton's final snaps was really awesome. And to see him sitting there at the end crying as he, you know, realizing this may be a brief chance I have that I may never get back to again. Pretty sad and awesome to watch. Neil, we haven't heard a lot from you. Is there anything that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, sure. I think the Cam Newton question about if he was up the game or not, I think you talk about perhaps that moment where he shut down, where he didn't go for the ball, which I thought was a terrible effort on his part. I think it was before that. If you saw him throughout the entire game, he looked slower than the game. He looked like the game was running away from him all the way through. I think to all the games throughout the regular season, all we've done is see Cam Newton's teeth pretty much. And every play. And this tonight, the only time we saw Cam Newton's teeth was when he was counting them to make sure they were still all there.
Yeah, and that's something that's been said about Cam literally all the way back to the drafting process. And again, like I said, I am extremely high on Cam. He is totally deserving of the MVP. He's going to be the star in this league for a long time. But that was something they said because he was undefeated in college. And he's a bit of an emotional guy. And it was something that the coaches and the scouts were saying is that, you know, look, he's been phenomenal, but again, he takes the losses personally, and what happens when he starts losing? And obviously Carolina saw this in the first couple seasons. They weren't 15-1 every season they've had with him. He had his ups and downs, his emotional ups and downs. And there are periods of times it seemed like he sort of checked out or he blamed himself or whatever. I mean, the emotions sort of affected him when things weren't going right. And I think that definitely showed up here in the Super Bowl. I think he was totally expecting him to come in here and be, you know, playing like he'd been, you know, that they would just take over the game the way that they had throughout the regular season. And it wasn't happening. And he started kind of kicking himself. And that's one of those things that as a quarterback, you can't do. I mean, you just gotta be like a Tao monk and just forget everything that happens constantly and keep yourself balanced. And look, I mean, this has been part of the debate about Cam this entire season. And, you know, and race has played into it and all these things about whether or not it's fair to criticize this guy for being so jubilant and so energetic on the high times and things like that. It's like, oh, would we be saying these things if he's black or not? I mean, all I know is that it's been part of the things that I've been at least a little bit critical about him. As a part of this whole debate, I mean, just simply that, like, okay, well, this guy has all these great highs, you know, when things are going well, is he going to have these same lows when things aren't going well? And I think, you know, emotionally, you saw that. You saw that come up in this game.
Yeah, we saw a quarterback who hadn't experienced having to pull his team from the verge of defeat and get that game-winning drive. We saw the same thing against Atlanta, I think, in the regular season. There's a few other things, Mark, if you don't mind.
Of course.
I would be asking Jimmy why on earth Carolina kept just running the ball on first down up the middle and for 1 yard or even less. And that was just horrible all night long. And it left them in third down situations where they were sort of third and nine, third and ten. Cam was forcing the ball. Yeah, sure, there were a few drops, but I also thought his touch was really off tonight as well. He was just slinging the ball so hard and over the head of a lot of receivers early on. It was really poor. Yeah, but then you have to go back to it and say, well, the MVP of this game tonight was Wade Phillips, and he was just
great,
fantastic. Took Olsen out of the game. I think Olsen had 4 catches. And I'm not sure if any of them were really meaningful catches. And then you expose Carolina's lack of a really top wide receiver. It was just tremendous from Wade Phillips.
I agree completely. It was almost like it was a strange game of like Wade Phillips had these pass rushers, you know, obviously Ware and Von Miller that are incredible. And then when I look at the defense for the Panthers, I see this incredible cornerback and these two amazing linebackers. But if it came down to it, it's obvious. I mean, maybe this is just stating the obvious, what we already know. Pass rushers win. And when you have two amazing pass rushers, yeah, they can really disrupt some things and cause some trouble. I thought that was very impressive. Well, those two guys deserve everything.
Especially when they're going up against two sort of average tackles. I mean, we're not talking about a premier left tackle here in this game. So they were running the show. But sorry, I think Jimmy
what
was
were you
coming
saying?
In there.
Yeah.
Well, I was gonna ask. It's me. It's Pod. I mean, the Panthers' pass rush was pretty good tonight too. They got to take in quite a bit. I do want to say I tweeted this out at halftime. Tip of the cap to Matt Chatham, who was on our preview podcast and gave us the tip that if the Panthers had to go to the silent count, that those pass rushers for the Broncos were going to eat them alive. And sure enough, it was a pro Broncos. Crowd, it appeared to me there was a lot of silent count going on. I saw the right guard smack in the center in the butt to snap the ball quite a few times, and the Broncos timed that up perfectly to the point that Aqib Talib was getting in on it, got himself offside on one play, should have been called offside on the field goal that didn't happen. I just want to give a tip of the cap to Matt Chatham. And by the way, tip of the cap to Matt Williamson, too, on the Football Today reunion. Also mentioned that, you know, one of the keys to watching this game was if the Panthers were to get down, how was Cam going to respond? Because we hadn't seen that at all this year.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Oh, go ahead.
Aqib Talib, what a thoroughly charming gentleman he appears to be. That face mask penalty was one of the worst face masks I think I've ever seen in watching this game. That was just horrendous.
Well,
it's
dangerous.
Go ahead.
It's interesting from my perspective. Because he's been the only first round pick from the University of Kansas for a very long time, and that's Northeast Kansas. That's my hood. So like, there's like everyone from around where I am, they want to be proud of this guy, but like now everyone wants to disown him ever since he got into the league. Because I mean, it's been not only look, there's a lot of troubled players in the league that you know have assaults and DUIs and things like that. But I mean, he was actually like under investigation for shooting at a person, and then all the charges are dropped because everyone recanted the testimony. But like, you know, the evidence was there. I mean, there were spent casings, there was like bullet holes and stuff. Like, this guy is pretty nuts. And now he's like basically the dirtiest player for the biggest rival to the Chiefs. And so, yeah, I am a big anti Aqib Talib guy. But I do want to like shift things over to a bit on Denver a bit, because we haven't talked too much about them. We've been focusing a bit on the Panthers. You know, it was an interesting game. You know, we've been saying this whole season that Denver had a championship defense, and that's basically what we saw. Peyton Manning completed just over 50% of his passes. Cam, completed just under 50. But look, I mean, like Peyton Manning's stat line was 13 for 23, 141 yards, zero touchdowns, an interception, and was sacked five times. He had a passer rating of 56.6. You know,
and he was they were one out of 14 on third downs.
Right, and so I mean, it was obvious that this was Denver's defense that won the day. And so I think that brings up an interesting point in just terms of like thinking about the narratives that were going into this game, because it was perceived that the NFC actually had greater talent overall in the NFC, that Arizona and Carolina were just the best teams in the league by far. They were going to steamroll anybody in the AFC West or anyone in the AFC in general, because the AFC teams, none of them had these sort of pristine records. But I would actually make the argument, I think this, you know, obviously you can only extrapolate so much from one game, but I think this points out that actually I think there's maybe more talent on the AFC side, that the AFC teams that you know, they didn't come in into the playoffs with near perfect records, but that's because they've been beating up on each other, and they continue to beat up on each other throughout the playoffs. And, you know, there's several teams you could see, because Denver was not the shoe-in to be the Super Bowl representative of the AFC. There's several teams we could see being there right now, and all of them were about at the same level. And look, I mean, pretty much all of them also had very good defenses. I mean, the Patriots have great defense, Chiefs, Steelers. You know, there's several teams you could see getting to this level and facing the NFC, where, you know, you had the Panthers, who, you know, before the season, we thought that their holes at wide receiver and at a few other spots were going to hold them back. Whereas Arizona seemed to be a fairly complete team, but they would fail at weird times. And it's just interesting seeing now that there are these top teams that weren't really tested against the AFC. Now we have them on the biggest stage, and weirdly, you know, what we thought was the unstoppable team, you know, played against what we thought was a mediocre AFC, you know, higher rung, and got demolished. I mean, what do you guys think about what this says about the two conferences?
I think that's really interesting. Part of me agrees with everything you said there, Nick, but it's also something in the back of my mind which says, this was a game that Carolina lost and Denver didn't win. So I'm still probably struggling a little bit there. I also have a feeling that if you go back to the end of the regular season, and sorry, Jay, but I think if New England had beaten Miami and got home field advantage, the Patriots would be in the Super Bowl. But I mean, that doesn't directly go against your point at all. I don't know. I think somebody mentioned earlier the experience shown by the Broncos tonight was a large determining factor. But yeah, don't know. But you make a lot of good points. It's probably quite hard to really. I'm struggling to get a really good argument against them there.
One of the worst parts about the Patriots not being in this Super Bowl is those are some pretty sweet hats. The gray, the black, and the gold lettering. I mean, that I got to say, that Super Bowl hat looks pretty damn sweet. I don't know if we can glean, you know, the power of the AFC versus the NFC in this one particular game. You know, I think, and of course, hindsight being 2020 and me not being a blustering homer, I don't know how well the Patriots would have done against this Carolina team. That offensive line for the Pats certainly would have had trouble. I do think the Patriots have a few more offensive weapons and a little bit better quarterback at this point of the season than Denver. But how much of a difference that would have made in this particular game, I'm not 100% sure it would have. I think Carolina might have been able to come out on top if they were facing my New England team. We look at the Steelers. I mean, the Steelers obviously had their trouble. They were all banged up, so they weren't going to be able to make it in. I guess really the one team out of the four that you mentioned there, Nick, would be your Chiefs. And then, you know, with the Chiefs, it comes down to, you know, and you sort of mentioned it here with the Panthers. At the beginning of the season, we all looked at the Panthers and said, oh, this team can't win. There's no way they can win. Look at their holes. And it's funny, all of their holes showed up in this last game, but weren't that apparent or hindering them during the regular season. I wonder the same about the Chiefs. You know, the Chiefs had their holes through the first five games of the season and then, you know, turn things around only to be beaten in the playoffs. So, again, I don't know if it says anything about the strength of the AFC versus the NFC. I think, you know, we always talk about parity in the NFL. I think this is about as close as we're ever going to get to any sort of parity in the NFL. It all comes down to the guy that, you know, at the most important position in football, and that's the quarterback. And if you've got a good one, and you're going to be good for years. And if you don't, well, you decide sort of do your best and, you know, hope that your defense can win on any given Sunday.
Yeah, but I think this Super Bowl disproves that almost, because, you know, Peyton Manning, if you look at his actual statistics for like the year, I mean, he was one of the worst quarterbacks in the league this year. I mean, you could make the argument that he was among the bottom three, whereas Cam Newton was, you know, arguably the best. You know, he was the league MVP. And so if you're looking at things as a pure quarterback matchup, this is one that went the exact opposite way that you would pick just basically quarterback versus quarterback.
I think you got to look at it in this sense for the Broncos when you're looking at it with a wider lens, in that Brock Osweiler is responsible for the Broncos being in the playoffs and being in the Super Bowl. Well, not being in the Super Bowl, being in the playoffs. And then you bring in the wily veteran Peyton Manning, where teams are like, all right, well, we know the book on Peyton. He's going to come in. He's going to change things. He knows how to read our defense. We can't do the same things that we could against Brock. You know, what I think is more interesting for this Broncos team is that I do believe that it's pretty clear that after Peyton drinks all those Budweisers tonight, he's going to wake up tomorrow morning and go, all right, I'm good. I'm riding off into the sunset. I got my two Super Bowls. I can sit now at the grown-up table with my little brother, who can no longer put it in my face anymore. He's got more rings than I do, you know, and say sayonara. What do the Broncos do moving forward? Brock is a free agent. Do they go forward with Brock, or are they going to try their hand with another quarterback? I don't think they have any other choice. I think they have to go forward with Brock. But that, I think, is going to be the most interesting storyline for the Broncos going into next year.
And if they throw their money at him, Von Miller is also hitting free agency, and they have $10 million in cap room, assuming about $150 million cap going into next year. So that's what's really interesting. I mean, Peyton, for some reason, wants to continue playing. He's going to be extremely expensive. And meanwhile, their young heir apparent is not signed, and also their best defensive player is unsigned. So, yeah, the Broncos are going to be fascinating to watch. I kind of feel like they had sort of laid out this season as being their last stand, and then they're going to have to rebuild at least a bit. Whereas, by the way, I think the Carolina Panthers are set up to be a powerhouse for a long time. They're getting their best wide receiver back. They're fairly young. They have some young guys that are hitting their stride, and they're going to be, you know, I think they're going to be, you know, one of the powers of the NFC for a long time.
Yeah, for sure. I totally agree. They need to build some things up, maybe another wide receiver, maybe get some other tight end behind Olsen, maybe deal with those tackles who did not have a great game tonight, but they are close. You know what I mean? Like, they just need to make a couple tweaks. They get some more people in that backfield to go along with Norman. They have some decent pieces there, but they could upgrade, and it could get really, really amazing and dominant. As we look at Osweiler and that team moving forward, as the Broncos go forward, if Von Miller – I don't think Von Miller comes back. I think that the money – if you get the MVP of the Super Bowl, he's going to get offered a paycheck somewhere that is going to be astronomical. So then they bring in – you're right. Go ahead.
They'll franchise tag Miller, I think, if they can't get a deal done with him. There's no way he's
– What is that going to be? If they only have $10 million.
I'm not even sure they can afford – Yeah, I'm not sure they can afford the franchise tag.
It's going to be $50 million minimum, right? I mean, like, that's one of the top paid positions, I would assume.
Yeah, they can't let that guy go. No way. He's not going anywhere.
But then you don't have Brock. That's the thing. I think the cap situation is going to force them to either just jettison a ton of players. Even then, they'll have a hard time signing both. But either way, I think they almost have to choose one or the other. We'll see. We'll see what they're able to get done. But
who would you choose?
Who would I choose? That's a good question. I mean, it all depends on what they think about Brock Osweiler. If they think that he really is, you know, the kind of guy they can build the franchise around, then I think you have to keep him. But if they think after however many years it's been, 4 years, something like that, of training this guy up, that he's just sort of like a backup that we've coached up to the maximum and he's never going to be better than that, then absolutely. Then you pick Vaughn, you do whatever you can to get a quarterback for cheap in the draft somehow.
How old is Von Miller? Does anybody know about what his age is? Pop that up.
He's on his rookie contract. I think he was in the same draft as Cam. So
yeah, 2011.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, 26 years old. Yeah, that's such a fast. I mean, we're looking at a Super Bowl where defense clearly won this Super Bowl. Defense was the two best defenses in the league, maybe. We're in the Super Bowl. Yeah, I think that the argument there is you have to go with Von Miller. Obviously, Peyton wasn't amazing this year, although he did have his veteranness to kind of rely on. Whew, I guess I'd have to go Von Miller, but that just scares me to sign the Von Miller and then let Brock Wilder walk and then draft somebody. They're not going to have, you know, they're going to be picking out of the top five. They're not going to get a top three quarterback. Nick, what were we going to say?
Well, and then DeMarcus Ware, he's only under contract for another year, and he's, you know, he's up in age. I think he's in his mid-30s at least.
Yeah.
He's probably going to ride out this contract and then retire. Then Vaughn then becomes a majority of your pass rush, although you have Shane Ray as well, and he's shown some things. So, you know, so maybe you feel okay about letting him go, but that's another thing you got to think about. If you choose against Vaughn, then, well, you know, you only have Ware for another year, and then you have one pass rusher. So, I mean, it's good. John Elway has some really interesting decisions to make. Going forward, it's going to be Game of Thrones in Denver for the next year or two.
I may have been wrong, but I assumed they signed or drafted Shane Ray to replace Ware next year. But we'll see.
Goodell has put out a rule proposal that he thinks that if you get two personal fouls, you would be ejected from a game. Obviously, the clear example from this game is Aqib Talib would not have even made it to the second half of this game if this was a rule. How do we all feel about this rule? Is that over the top and ridiculous? Is that what we should have after games like ODB this year, where he was like throwing his helmet around like a spear, you know, in the middle of a game? What do we think about this rule? Is it, you know, yeah, should it be at the discretion of the refs? Is there any thoughts? Jay, what do you think?
Did Aqib Talib have two personal fouls in the first half? I know he had that face mask there. I know he had offside.
He had the other one, too.
No, I think he had was it unsportsmanlike conduct? And
he had the taunting penalty, yeah.
Taunting, is that not personal foul?
That's not a personal foul. I don't think it's a personal foul.
I thought it was. Being that it was 15 yards, I thought it was of the same value, but I don't know that.
I'm going to say this about that, especially that face mask penalty. When I saw it, I was like, oh, my God, he just tried to rip his head off. And my father-in-law went, yeah, but it's a yard penalty. He tackled him at the two and prevented the touchdown and thus only gave up half the distance to the goal line. And when I looked at it in that lens, I went, oh, all right. At the same time, though, there's no place in football, in a game where we're trying to protect quarterbacks, in a game where the league is hypersensitive about concussions, that you can pull a guy down by the face mask the way that he did in that first half. That's just outrageous and cannot be allowed. Now, at the same time, I get what Roger's trying to do. He's trying to take out the subjectivity of the call out of the referee's hands. So the ref doesn't have to subjectively say, well, that was clearly a player who's out of control and needs to be removed from the game. I don't know. It's so hard, right? Because you can never tell when there's that guy that, you know, clearly needs to be taken out of the game. And I think Aqib Talib in the first half needed to be taken out of this game. But at the same time, you know, if the refs had jumped in with Odell and Josh Norman and that controlled that a little bit better, I think they could have. And it didn't have to get to the point that it did. So, I don't know. I could go really either way with this. I understand what Roger's trying to do. But at the same time, the first time that one player gets ejected out of the game every single person in the media is going to jump on that and be like, I can't believe this guy was taken out of the game. He's just playing with all his heart. He's his passion for the game. He didn't deserve to be ejected. Like, you can see it. You can see the narrative written already.
I think I think leaving it to the discretion of the referees is probably the safest option, but I wouldn't have the two personal foul rule. I think you can see different sorts of face masks. We've seen face masks where it's part of wrapping up in the tackle, and maybe the hand slides down and catches the face mask, and there's a natural reaction to sort of pull it. But tonight, that face mask tonight was just, I would have ejected them for that one, because that was extremely dangerous, I felt.
Yeah, my initial reaction to the idea was that I supported it. I mean, that basically makes a personal foul a yellow card, the equivalent of a yellow card in soccer, you know, where, and if these are the sorts of things that you're trying to eliminate, then that it makes sense to me. On the other hand, I mean, as representing a team that really gets everything done with defense, you know, there are a lot of those sort of those defensive, like especially roughing the passer penalties that are always a little bit iffy. You know, when a pass rusher gets sort of knocked down, he ends up kind of hitting the quarterback in the knee, and maybe it's some of his own momentum he didn't necessarily mean to, or he runs up and his hand like hits, you know, like grazes the quarterback's helmet, and technically touching the helmet of the quarterback is a penalty. So I would hate to see a guy like Justin Houston get like knocked out early in a game for you know, back-to-backs, you know, if he wins like that. On the other hand, I don't remember the last time that he actually got two in a game. You know, I mean, every now and then he'll get an iffy call, and same thing with, you know, Holly and some of our other pass rushers. But I mean, I think it's probably fairly rare the amount of games where a single player gets two of those 15-yard personal foul penalties.
40 times this year. Was that what I've read? I think it was 41 players would have been ejected under the rule this year.
Oh, really? So, yeah, I totally missed that then. Yeah.
But there's a lot of games. That's a lot of games. You know what I mean? Like, that's every single game across the whole year. But you would have it maybe once or twice a weekend, it sounds like. Two or three a weekend, even. Which would be interesting.
Sounds like a job for Mike Perry.
I think it's one of those things. There are certain players who get them all the time who we would just see them get ejected week after week, you know, and I'm sure knowing our league, they would start to compile, or if somebody was getting ejected week after week, they would get suspended for longer. I like the idea. I mean, I hated what ODB did this year, but it does seem too, it's hard because two seems a little too severe, but three seems ridiculous. That seems like you'd never eject anybody. But two, I'm just worried, exactly like you brought up, the pass rush is a perfect example, Nick. Somebody just barely touches the helmet, or they hit him a beat too late because they can't slow their fat ass down. And, you know, something happens. That can happen all the time. And all of a sudden, boom, you know, you're out of a game. I mean, if Von Miller or Ware had left this game early, a game that was won by pass rush, this game would have been a totally different game. Not that those guys had any penalties.
That's where it comes down to the referee's discretion, because it's about the intent, isn't it? It's about the intention the player has of, is he trying to hurt somebody? Is he doing it with intention there? Or is it just grazing his head?
Well, I think maybe...
Think of all those helmet-to-helmet penalties that aren't helmet-to-helmet. The guy legitimately led with his shoulder, but,
totally.
Because of the Absolutely. Angle that it was at, it looked like his helmet may have made contact with the other player's helmet. I don't think you can referee the game in that manner. I think maybe it's something that you do after the game. I mean, why can't the league, when the game is over, after they reviewed the tape, they've seen it, they can be completely unbiased about it. I'm sorry. Can anybody be completely unbiased about this league? Hand out punishments in that way. I don't understand why they couldn't do something like that. I mean, I think there are certain players in this league that we all know have taken it to that line, you know, that gray line, and they've clearly gone over it. And then there's other players that just play with a certain amount of heart and passion and love of this game, and they play hard. And I'm my concern would be for those players and losing that aspect of the football game.
Yeah. I think the one question about leaving it till after the game, For me, I think that's a good backup system to have that after the game to retrospectively pick up guys for that sort of play. But this is, the season's only 16 games long, or else you're into a knockout competition. And I think the team who receives the knockout hit probably deserve an advantage during that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think also, I mean, the big issue is that, you know, I mean, maybe the referees can differentiate between personal fouls that are intentional and those that they find to be incidental. Because that's mm-hmm. what I would worry. Because, like, you know, you would talk about, okay, well, you get two and then it knocks that player out of the game. Well, sometimes it's only going to take one. So, it's like, say you have a pass rusher that gets, you know, a roughing the passer that, you know, again, maybe he's a bit iffy, maybe it was just an effort play and he stumbled into the guy, whatever. Like, either way, he gets one on, like, the first drive of the game. Well, now he's going to pull up and he's going to pull his punches and do all that kind of stuff for the rest of the game because maybe that team can't afford to not have him out there, period. And so you essentially nullified a part of the opponent's defense for the rest of the game. So maybe, I mean, again, it's adding another layer of discretion for the refs, which, I mean, again, like I think there are teams that have sort of just gotten away with it and they've sort of like made the gamble that, you know what, we can play fast and loose. We can play tough. We're going to get some of these penalties. We're going to get a few every game. And you know what? 15 yards is nothing. If you compare it to, you know, again, soccer, where a penalty is going to be a point and, you know, very likely a point and a single score in soccer can totally swing a game. You know, comparatively in NFL, that's like a 15-yard penalty isn't always that much. And so I think something a little extra, if that's something you're really trying to eliminate, it makes sense. But you know, I am worried about how that's going to be, you know, distributed in terms of in the wave of the game. Because as I mentioned, you know, in a podcast earlier, the Broncos, yes, they had like the best defense in the league, but also they also racked up, I think, the most personal foul penalties in the league, them and the Bengals. And look, I mean, for the Bengals, obviously it cost them on their own just with the yardage, but the Broncos, they racked up almost like $500,000 worth of personal foul fines after the fact. And obviously it didn't deter them because the guys that were racking up those fines are making the sort of salaries that they're pretty much, you know, inconsequential to them. So, you know, maybe an ejection here or there, or, you know, or maybe them getting a little more liberal about suspensions is what it's going to take. I don't know.
Mark, is it possible just to go back to the game in terms, since we're talking about penalties there just now?
Sure.
I thought one of the key points in this game was actually how many penalties Carolina got. I think it was penalized 11 times for over 80 yards. I think that's quite unusual for them this season, and it probably points to back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of the game just moving faster than they were moving. Caught in the headlights, I think.
Yeah, definitely felt that way. It was interesting because I think the biggest caught in the headlights moment we've seen in a Super Bowl, at least in the last 10 years, was 2 years ago when the Broncos just got into a Super Bowl with the Seattle, and they clearly were just not on the same level of physicality and preparedness. And then tonight it was just interesting to see, like, oh, Denver learned their lesson. They came as ready as they could be, even with an aging quarterback who can't do what he used to be able to do. They all were as ready as they could be to play that game, and you couldn't say the same for the Panthers. And definitely by the time the Panthers kind of got into their rhythm, it was clearly just too late. And no one really got their offense firing at all. But it was more surprising, I guess, for Carolina not to get an offense rolling.
Yeah.
Can we also talk about how much the halftime show sucked? I thought, this is Super Bowl 50. They brought it up in the opening to the show. This is Super Bowl 50. It's got to be bigger. It's got to be better. It's got to be... There was no innovation at all in the halftime show this year. It was typical, boring, blech.
Can I just jump in there? Since it was mainly Coldplay, and just to point out that even though I'm from Britain, I don't like Coldplay at all. I have to say, they struggled because Lady Gaga absolutely knocked your national anthem out of the park. It was absolutely fabulous, I thought.
Beautiful. Yeah, I agree. Well, totally great. Go ahead.
My halftime thoughts are just simply, I mean, well, one thing, I was happy to notice that Coldplay was not lip-syncing, which has been at least a rumor, if not an accusation, if not a fact, about several of the former halftime show performances. I mean, like, some of them were just really obvious. They were like, they were definitely playing a CD and jumping around. But, you know, it was pretty obvious that at least Coldplay, I mean, it was there, you know, huffing and puffing and, you know, not particularly good equalized sound and picking up a bit of the audience along the way. So, like, at least I was like happy. They're like, oh, hey, yeah, this guy's actually singing. So, yeah, other than that, halftime, I feel like is like part of the show. That and the commercials are the sort of things that people that are not as interested in the football tend to pay more attention to. And so that's why I always take that as my time to pay less attention and get my pee and beer runs in.
I'll tell you about the commercials sucked too this year. Not a single one of them stood out. I'm wondering if these advertisers start starting up.
I disagree.
What do you got? What do you got?
I think there was one, the best commercial, but I think this is not a good sign, was where a tortilla chip almost caused a miscarriage. That was the best they did. And I think that was a dark path for them to go down. I didn't think that was appropriate. I was like, whoa. I don't know if this is a good idea, Doritos. I don't know what you're doing here. But that's the only commercial I honestly could remember even right now. They were so not funny or exciting, so boring, and just, ugh. What were you going to say, Nick?
I was just going to say that was the only one I remembered as well. That was, I struggle to say that was my favorite, but yeah, that was the most noteworthy commercial for me as well. The Doritos marriage.
So, I mean, here's the other thing about that. I'm wondering if, one, advertisers are smartening up. They're paying too much money for these Super Bowl commercials and the funny stuff they're trying to make viral stuff all the time now, releasing stuff on the internet. That Doritos commercial that you're talking about, I voted for that commercial, like, 3 months ago. I don't know. It may have been sooner, but it felt like 3 months ago that I voted for that one over these other two that were produced, and I voted online for my favorite one to show up on the Super Bowl, and that was the one that ended up winning because it was by far the funniest of the three that you had to choose from. The other thing is, you know, we've got they were promoting the Grammys, and we've got the Oscars coming up here soon, and I'm wondering if we're going to see some more commercials during those particular programs that we're going to see. Was there a Budweiser commercial? I did have to leave, like, right as the halftime
the only
show.
One I, there was, like, a rock and roll kind of one that I saw that was very, you know, horses, loud music, bars, nothing very creative, just kind of very flash images. I heard rumors of something with a baby horse, but I don't remember any baby horse. I don't know.
The only Budweiser commercial. The only Budweiser commercial I saw was Peyton Manning's post-game interview. So
right, and I guarantee you that was paid for. I do remember the Bud Light commercial with Seth Rogen and Amy Schumer talking about having the biggest caucuses in the nation.
Yes,
you not know too big. Nobody's you can handle it. Nobody's yes, nobody's caucus is larger than ours. Yes.
Awesome, witty, wonderful. Two of the funniest comedians we have, and this is what we bring. Oh, Lord. But anything else with this game that you guys want to say before we wrap this up? We're coming up on an hour now. Anything that we should say before we move on here?
Yeah, I just wanted to I just wanted to get on the useless stat bandwagon if possible.
Nice.
just to say that the team in the Super Bowl who has the MVP and the coach of the year, they're now 1-4 in Super Bowls. So
interesting. That's interesting.
We also have our first quarterback to win with two different teams in Peyton Manning.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. We're waiting still for the coach.
Well,
but yes.
He's been to four Super Bowls with four different coaches. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is correct.
Well, and you know, like,
Jay, do you think that puts him get him closer to Brady in the all-time list, or is that another podcast?
I think it is another podcast, but I don't think Peyton Manning comes close to Tom Brady's postseason stats. I don't think that is not a battle that any Peyton Manning believer is going to win.
And do you think Manning's last few weeks and also now tonight, although he didn't do much in the game itself, enhances his reputation? When you look back down the line in 10 years' time, will we look back and say, yeah, what he did in the final year really enhanced his reputation?
Caught him a sack. I mean,
what was that?
If anything, I think it hurt his reputation this final season. But I don't think it hurt it that much. I mean, I think Peyton Manning, look, I mentioned this during the Football Today reunion show. Peyton Manning's one of the greatest of all time, if not the number two of all time. And, you know, we're blessed to see him. Probably isn't number two, but he's definitely, you know, up there in the top five, top 10. You know, anything he did this year wasn't necessarily going to change that.
He definitely had an impact on the game. You know what I mean? Like I think there's a lot of great quarterbacks who don't break the mold, but I think he broke the mold. He was different than anyone before him. There are people now that emulate the way he played the ball, especially at the line. And I think if you're looking at that build, if like what the ideal like build of a quarterback is, he's one of those guys, which a lot of the other greats we have are not. Where he's just kind of, you know, 6'5" rocket arm, as he jokes about in his commercials. There's not a lot of men built like that. And so he has that going for him. You know, I don't know. I think he kind of fits the prototype in an interesting way, more so than a lot of other quarterbacks. I agree with it's not worth fighting for. I agree with Jay, but he's at least, I'd say, a top 10 of all time. There's no question. I think that's undeniable.
It's all on the forehead. You got to have a big forehead to be a good quarterback.
My mom, that was her one comment tonight, was like, look how red his forehead is, as if it like didn't fit inside of his helmet.
We need on here.
Yes, definitely. This is great, guys. I appreciate it. We should wrap up the show for tonight. I will see all of you guys sometime down the road. This is gonna be my last show. For you guys out there in the NFU podcast world, I've been with the show a year. I have to move on, but it was really fun. I appreciate it, especially Jay. Thank you so much for this opportunity. It's been awesome, man. The show is great. And with that being said,
I'm just about that action, boss.